Welcome to the Beacon Broadcast from Beacon Baptist Church in Burlington, North Carolina, featuring expositional Bible teaching by Pastor Greg Barkman. If you'd like to correspond with the Beacon Broadcast, or if you wish to support this radio ministry, write to the Beacon Broadcast, Post Office Box 159, Alamance, North Carolina, 27201, or find us on the web at beaconbaptist.com. BeaconBaptist.com. The Beacon Broadcast is supported in part by the gifts of faithful listeners. Now, with today's message from God's Word, here is Greg Barkman.
Amazing Grace. Well, I trust if you are a regular listener to the Beacon Broadcast that you are beginning to understand the value of the book of Ecclesiastes, and to realize that it does have an awful lot to teach us about life. It's not that mysterious and a difficult book that many people think it to be, but it actually is a very practical book. And a lot of what we've been talking about the last three or four broadcasts would fit into the category of a common sense philosophy of life. Now, when I use that word philosophy, some people are going to say, whoops, that's not for me, I'll tune out now. But philosophy just means the principles by which you govern your life, how you think life works, how you think the world works, how you think things fit together in this world. And in a sense, that's really what the book of Ecclesiastes is. It's to teach us a proper philosophy of life. It shows us the errors of wrong philosophies and the damage that wrong philosophies will do. If we pursue wrong philosophies, the damage they will do to our lives. But if we learn the philosophy that Solomon is trying to teach us in this book of Ecclesiastes, then our life is going to take on new meaning and wonderful dimensions of richness and fulfillment and satisfaction. But it all comes about by having a right focus, a right orientation, a right way of thinking. We've got to think properly about life. And that, of course, begins by thinking properly about God and about His control of our lives and accepting that, and then seeing every element of our life in the light of that, that this is something that God has appointed. This is something that God has given me. This is something that God is doing in my life. And when that comes into focus, and there are a lot of other strands that blend into this, but that's the bottom line, so to speak, of the whole thing. And when that comes into focus, then life takes on a wonderful dimension of fulfillment that otherwise you can't have. Otherwise, it'll be continual frustration. And so we'll continue our study in the book of Ecclesiastes on this Wednesday, July 29, as you have joined us, and we're glad that you have, and as some of you have enabled us by your financial gifts. Well, we've learned in chapter 3, first of all, that God appoints the circumstances of our lives. That's verses 1 through 8. Everything is by His appointment. A time to gain, a time to lose, a time to keep, a time to throw away, a time to tear, a time to sow, a time to keep silent, so forth. All of these things, this poem that we're so familiar with, is just simply telling us that these circumstances of our lives, the big ones and the small ones, it started out with a time to be born and a time to die. Those are the big ones. You don't get much bigger than that on either end of life. But then some of the things right on through the middle, as small as a time to tear and a time to sow. That seems pretty mundane, but you see, those are circumstances of our lives. These are the little tasks that have to be done. And when you realize that those are there by God's appointments, and start viewing life in that way, that makes all the difference in the world. So God appoints the circumstances of our lives, verses 1 through 8. God appoints the perplexities of our lives, verses 9 through 11. And we've come to that last verse in that second section, verse 11, which talks about the perspective of eternity. And we read, He has made everything beautiful in its time. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, He has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. The perspective of eternity, and it starts with the statement that God's appointments are good. He has made everything beautiful in its time. All of these appointments of life, yes, we accept the fact that God has appointed them, but we have to go one step further and come to understand that because God appointed them, they're beautiful, they're good. Well, I don't see how this is good. It's good. Well, I don't see how that could be good. It's good. Well, there's so many examples of that, but I was thinking of one the other day. We would generally call wealth good and poverty bad. Right? If we're trying to decide what's good and what's bad. I don't see how living in poverty could possibly be good for me or good for anybody else. And I don't see how being given an abundance of wealth could be bad for me or anybody else. It can certainly make life a whole lot easier, and it can. It can, and it does often, but not always. But here's the thing. How many times have you seen someone who acquired an abundance of wealth and it ruined their life? They were doing, seemed to be doing fairly well. You don't know what was going on inside their heart, but their life seemed to be going pretty well on track, and from all outward appearances seemed to be a reasonable, stable, normal life. And then through some circumstance, whether it was an inheritance, whether they won the lottery, whatever it was, they suddenly acquired a huge financial windfall, wealth, one of the things that we would consider to be good, and it ruined their lives. From that point on, their life started to unravel. Oh, yeah, they had wealth. Of course, they didn't manage it well. They squandered it. They misused it, but they blew it. And in the process, they picked up a lot of things that ended up destroying their lives. Perhaps, who knows, drugs, alcohol, immorality, hard telling. I mean, it's all kinds of things that come along. And a lot of times it's just financial foolishness that eventually winds them up in worse condition than they were before they got, financially worse condition than they were before they got all this wealth. So what that thing that we consider to be good, wealth, turned out to be bad for them. And yet, on the other hand, take that poverty situation. All of us have known people who struggled with poverty, were reared in poverty, and yet they have a strength of character. They have a nobility of life. They have a beauty to their lives that radiates from them and rubs off on others and inspires others, that clearly came to them because it was formed in the crucible of this poverty. This thing that we would call bad turned out to be good beyond all measure for them. And I'd mentioned on the broadcast a day or two ago that a number of times I've traveled to Africa, and I see people like that. I minister to people like that, who I've come to minister to them. Primarily, my purpose for going is to help train pastors who have not had opportunity for formal training, and so this is one way to help them. And so I go over to help them, primarily to help them to improve their knowledge of God's Word and their ability to preach it to their people. But I come away with so much more in exchange, because I get down on a personal level, rubbing shoulders with some people who have known nothing but poverty, and yet have the most noble, beautiful character of almost anybody I know, that exceeds that of nearly anybody that I know in the United States of America, even, I mean, if we restrict our search to Christians only. There is a nobility, a dignity, a beauty, a radiance about so many of these people that has been forged in the crucible of their poverty. And it has produced some beautiful gems, some real riches, some real wealth that can't be measured in money, but is measured in the character of a person's life. And it was the poverty that produced that. So who's to say what is good and what is bad except who? God. He knows what is best. He knows what is needed. He knows what circumstances in my life and yours will produce what He wants from my life. And God didn't put me in Africa. He put me in America, so I've got to learn to live a God-honoring, productive, people-helping life in the context of America. And I've got to work through all these things that actually can become great obstacles to that, the American dream and all of that. God didn't put me in Africa, though I love to go over there and to spend time with these people, but that's not my home. That's not my place of ministry, my primary place of ministry. And if you took some of those people and brought them to America, it might be their downfall. How many times in the context of missionary work have we seen promising young men who looked like they really had some gifts that could be used for God in ministry, and somebody said, well, that's a very promising person. Let's take them to America and give them some really good training, really good education. They don't have any good schools here. So we can take them to America and give them an opportunity to really learn the Bible and learn the original languages, learn Greek, learn Hebrew, learn how to minister God's word in a way that they'll never learn if they don't leave Africa and come to a place like America. And so many times what has happened is that American experience has corrupted these otherwise promising young men in all different kinds of ways. And in some cases, they just aren't willing to go back to Africa again, back to their poverty-stricken homeland, because they've had a taste of the American affluence that they had heard about but had never really experienced and could only dream about. Now it's theirs. They see it's within their grasp. And if they'll just stay in America, they can continue to enjoy that lifestyle. So why go back to Africa? Well, why go back to Africa is because that's the reason why you came to America, was to get training so you could go back to Africa and really have an impact over there. And now you're turning your back on all that to chase this elusive American dream. The affluence of America turned out to be your ruination. Really. And so many times these men who do that never amount to anything. Well, they enjoy the American lifestyle, but what shall it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what will it profit a person if they spend their whole life enjoying the things and never really accomplishing anything for eternity? Until tomorrow, Greg Barkman saying good day. May God give you His eternal peace.